It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond along with Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, dude?
What's going on, man?
You chilling like a villain?
Feeling like a villain, sitting here looking at the Christmas tree that my wife already has up.
I saw that, man. You guys are, I can't beat the barbers, ladies and gentlemen.
yeah, that's
crazy. Well, there is a reason behind that. My wife has to have minor surgery tomorrow, so she wanted to go ahead and get it up because she's not going to be able to live things for a couple of weeks. So.
That explains everything. I did not know that. Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up, dude?
What's going on, guys? I'm still falling out from last night. I'll tell you what, up there, there was snow on the ground in Boone, and the real feel was one.
It gives me flashbacks to the fall of 91. I was actually a freshman at Leeds McRae. I transferred in my sophomore year to East Carolina. And, man, I remember it snowed and it snowed and it snowed from October all the way up to – there was snow even up at Sugar Mountain in May. The last night I was there, my first year of college, it was still snow on the ground, so on the mountain, so in May. So it's like snow, and more snow, and – I think one of these days we'll have to go visit Kyle being living in
New York. Hopefully at some point, yes, you will.
So we'll talk about that at another time for sure, guys. It seems to be a busy off week. We're supposed to be off this week, but lots of stuff to talk about. I'm going to throw this out to you guys first. By the way, before I forget, before I even get into that. Happy birthday to Holt Naylors, our starting quarterback for East Carolina. Really proud of him and his progressions. The last couple weeks, he's just the game has slowed down for him, and really proud of him. We can talk more about that.
Yeah.
I want to, before we start, take a deep dive into East Carolina.
Hey, wait a minute. Before you do that,
okay.
Let's tell the listeners why they're here. We got Ryan Robinson and Brandon Simmons coming your way later in the podcast.
Yes, we got two big guests, and certainly that's going to be cool. We're going to start off with a roundtable. Hey, how about this? How about the – I want to get your thoughts on both of you. I'm going to pitch it to both of you on this, on the rankings last night that came out Tuesday night for the college football playoff. LSU number one, Ohio State two, and then you had Clemson three. And then Georgia moved up to fourth. That was a shocker, a surprise. Our good buddy
Mike Gray called it.
Yes, he did. So I gotta give Mr. Gallagher, Mr. Please don't call me SEC Gallagher, right, Terry SEC Gallagher. I thought he's gonna kill me for saying that. I'm being sarcastic. Terry can't stand SEC. What did you guys think? Alabama number five. It actually sounds
ridiculous.
They got it right.
It's ridiculous. No, it's ridiculous. Georgia has no business being in the top four. They lost to South Carolina. That's a bad loss. South Carolina's a bad football team.
But they have two top. They have two top 25. A good.
I don't care, man. You might as well just let the whole SEC in. And Clemson.
Yeah.
How about their conference schedule? The ACC's not garbage. What about Oregon? What about Oklahoma?
Oregon definitely deserves. I don't understand how Oregon and you can make a case even for Utah as well. Right there, they're right near each other. They're
Baylor. What about Baylor? I mean, I don't.
Yeah.
It's nonsense to me at this point. You got to go to eight, and I don't know at what point some of these power conferences are going to get tired of just getting a paycheck to the SEC's invited club and put their foot down and say, look, screw this. We're going to have to share this money a little more. Go to eight. And, at that point, I think you'd have the group of five have to get one of the playoff spots. Or the American may just get it. I'm telling you, the way this conference is going, at that point, if they go to eight and they take the conference champions – you throw Boise State and BYU in with what's already in the American, there's no doubt it's a power conference. But you ask about the rankings. I guess I'm all right with Clemson being in there, even though I think their schedule's garbage. Georgia does not deserve to be in the top four. Bubba, what do you think?
I agree. I like Terry. I was not surprised that Georgia was fourth in a way. Because like Dave referenced, you had those you had the wins over Florida and Notre Dame, but like you said, Kyle, that loss to South Carolina, man. And if I was doing the rankings right now, my number four would be Alabama. As much as I'm not an Alabama fan, I mean, just looking at it objectively, Alabama versus Georgia, I think Alabama's the better team. Now, could Georgia beat Alabama? Sure they could. I mean, they've been right there. But I think if Alabama and Georgia played 10 times, that Alabama would probably win at least
8 or 9. Right?
Yeah, at least 7 of them. Yeah.
I'd probably have Oregon Porter, guys. I mean, let's just crown the SEC champion, the national champion. If all we're going to do is put this SEC team in or that SEC team in, and if this one ain't in, that one's going to be in, well, let's just make the SEC champion the national champion and be done with it.
And here's a – and, guys, here, I was just going to quickly say,
why don't we do like my idea of having 4 SEC teams in the playoff, and then that way we'll finally get sacrificed year.
We'll just eliminate the playoffs. Well, I get what you're saying. Well, you know what? The committee may screw up one of these times and put 3 in. And, you know, I'm telling you, at some point.
The Pac-12 is getting – they should – the Pac-12 should team up with the American –
And the Big 12 is getting screwed this year, too.
That's true, yeah.
I mean, it's like I said, at some point, some of these other so-called power conferences has got to be tired of just getting the paycheck and do what's right for them and the rest of the conferences. What were you going to say, Bob?
I was going to say a couple of things. One, from our perspective, we just simply want as much controversy and as many teams that really feel like they can stake a claim to that top four as we can. Not that I necessarily think it's going to happen, because I really don't. But if, let's say, Baylor wins the Big 12, they're undefeated, they take care of business against Oklahoma and run the table. And then also, let's say that somehow Minnesota ran the table and beat Ohio State. Definitely don't think it's going to happen. But if it did, and what are you going to have? You're going to have one of those two maybe get left out? We just want controversy.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. That would be what's best for the Americans. And, guys, I hadn't looked at the entire conference five. Where did the American teams in Boise State check in?
Let's see. There were 5 group of 5 teams in. The highest ranked group of 5 team was Cincinnati. And the Bearcats came in at 17th, I believe it was. I think Cincinnati, following up on behind Cincinnati was Memphis. I believe the Tigers were 18th. And the third so-called group of 5 team was Boise State. The Broncos were 21st. And then Navy was 23rd. And then App State replaced SMU at 25th.
So we knocked out SMU, huh?
Yep.
That's about not beating them.
With spoilers.
There you go. So we got 3 teams in, plus a Sun Belt, plus a Mountain West. So, I'll tell you an interesting thing about Memphis. They're in a bad situation, potentially. They may have to beat Cincinnati 2 weekends in a row.
Oh, that's right.
To make the Sugar Bowl, or excuse me, the Cotton Bowl, because if they beat Memphis, if Memphis wins out, They win their next game and then beat Cincinnati to close the year. Cincinnati would still win the East as long as they take care of business,
right?
The rest of the way, they got 1 or 2 more games left. Cincinnati, you guys know?
Is it 2?
Yeah. Cincinnati also has Temple.
You got Memphis and Temple. That's it.
Yeah. Temple comes to Nippert Stadium and then they go to
Memphis.
Yep.
So as long as they beat Temple, if Memphis beats them, Cincinnati will still represent the East, and then you'll have a situation where Memphis will have to turn around and beat Cincinnati again the very next week. Whereas if Cincinnati beats Memphis, you could have at that point if Navy beats SMU, the winner of SMU Navy would win the West if Cincinnati beats Memphis. That's what I'm trying to say. So, it's going to be interesting how that plays out.
Yeah, it really is.
Bad scheduling, by the way. The American, and I know Cincinnati-Memphis is a rivalry game, and I guess for the next 2 years we're not going to have divisions, so it doesn't matter. But when we go back to divisions, we need to make sure we don't schedule any East-West games the last week of the year, because it potentially sets up matchups like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Here's the part we're going to have to edit.
Yeah, sorry about that. So I feel strongly about the American. I felt all the time in the history of this podcast, Kyle has been saying about we would have to sue the Group of Five, or at least the American, or maybe even some of the Power Five conferences. But as strong as – it's not that I didn't agree with you, Kyle, but the every day that goes by, the more I think that's going
to – You mean the American and other conferences in the Group of Five would have to sue the Power Five or the NCAA?
Yes.
It may happen. It may have to happen. I don't know. I'll tell you, again, the American keeps getting more and more respect, and particularly I've noticed from ESPN and ABC. So it's going to be interesting to see if that trend continues. If they're our ally – And I think when you sign a contract to pay somebody $8 million a year, you tend to maybe start treating them a little different than somebody you're paying $1 million a year, even though $1 million is a lot of money to you and I. You know what I mean? They're paying us $8 million per team per year. So you would think they'd want that product to be perceived as strong as possible.
Absolutely.
Guys, y'all want to go to our first guest, and then we'll come back and talk some Pirate basketball. A friend of mine, named Natalie Pridgen, lost her nephew a couple years back. His name was Harrison, and they've started a charity in honor of him called Hugs from Harrison, and they're going to be taking up toys. There's drop-off spots that is all throughout Lenoir and Greene County, and all the toys are going to be given to the James and Connie Maynard Children's Hospital in Greenville, and I called up with Natalie to get details about the toy drive earlier today. So let's go to that interview now.
Right now, we're joined by Natalie Pridgen and Mike Pridgen, if Mike will participate. And they've started a charity called Hugs from Harrison. And Harrison was a very special little boy. And we're going to tell you about the charity, but first we're going to tell you a little about Harrison. And I'm going to let Natalie do that. So Natalie, tell us about Harrison and your relationship with him, and just about his life.
Harrison, our nephew, I started keeping him when he was 6 weeks old, him and his twin brother Jackson, and he was like one of ours. And in September of 2017, we found out Harrison had a brain tumor. And when they operated and done two surgeries, it turned out that it was glioblastoma. It was grade 4 cancer. Harrison did chemo and radiation, and it wasn't doing any good, so they stopped. And in December 2017, Harrison passed away.
And how old was Harrison when he did pass away? And just talk about, you know, he has a twin brother, and just the impact he had while he was here.
Harrison was 7 years old when we found out that he had cancer, and he passed away when he was 8. He was a very giving child. He would go and get stuff to his mom and throw it in the trash can and bring and give to you if he thought it was of value. He called it dumpster diving. So he liked to give. He liked to give, and we felt that this charity, to give children toys at Christmas at the James and Connie Maynard Children's Hospital in Greenville, would be very appropriate in Harrison's memory.
Yeah, and the charity's called Hugs from Harrison, and just what she said, similar to Toys from Tots, we're collecting toys, but they're all going to go to children at the James and Connie Maynard Children's Hospital in Greenville. Talk about the kind of things we're looking to get, where the toys and items can be donated, the age range of the children, and when they need to have it by.
Okay. The ages are infant to teenager. I would guess 19 as far as it would go. Anything from teethers, rattlers, musical mobiles for the babies, blankets, they'll even take blankets, your basic toys, cars, trucks, puzzles, coloring books, building blocks, Lego, baby dolls, Barbies, stuffed animals.
And as Natalie was saying, Barbie dolls, cars, trucks, anything for infant all the way up through a teenager. Probably maybe some gift cards even for teenagers.
Yeah, teenagers, gift cards, and if anybody wants to buy like Xbox games or anything like that, they'll take it too.
Xbox, PlayStation, I mean, anything you could think of that a child up to a teen from like she's saying, from an infant all the way up to 18, 19, may be able to use, you know, particularly, you know, Christmas gifts and also, you know, if all the toys aren't given out at Christmas, yeah, they'll be saved for
if
other occasions.
An abundance of toys given and they're not all given out for Christmas, they'll save them for coming off chemo parties, birthday parties, anything to celebrate while they're in there and put a smile on their face.
And where can people donate the toys?
We have a drop-off box at Big Game Brewing in Kinston, Lions Industries for the Blind in Kinston, Fat Baby's Country Cooking in Kinston, Grandma's Attic in Kinston. And you can also contact me if I need to meet and pick up, I will. My number is 252-933-9569.
And wasn't there also a location in Greene County for drop-off?
Yes, at Greene County High School.
So Greene Central.
Greene Central High School.
Okay, so for all our listeners that are...
In First PH Church in Kinston.
First PH Church in Kinston. And a lot of our listeners will be in the Greenville area, so your closest drop-off would be Greene Central. But if not, make it over to Kinston. And if you got a bunch of toys to drop off, just contact Natalie and she'll figure it out. You know,
I'll go pick them up.
And what's your number one more time, Natalie?
252-933-9569.
Okay. And, guys, want to have them all in by when?
December the 16th.
December 16th. So between now and December 16th, any of those locations, you can call Natalie at the number given. You can email me at thesportsobjective@gmail.com. I'll be willing to give you any information if you don't get it on the podcast.
And there's a Facebook page.
And the Facebook page, yes. Thank you, Natalie. Yeah, go like the Facebook page. And the Facebook page is Hugs from Harrison.
Right.
And just go like the Facebook page. And we'll share that Facebook page on the Sports Objective Facebook page. And need to make this a big success and give back to sick kids in Eastern North Carolina in the memory of Harrison.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Natalie. And... Guys, it's four great calls. So everybody out there, go to the drop-off spot. Take toys. I mean, Toys for Tots is a great fundraiser. You know, so give to both. You know, you don't have to choose one or the other. These are going to go to sick children at the Children's Hospital there in Greenville, and it's in memory of a very special little boy. And, you know, go donate some toys. You can go to our Facebook page, and we'll have the link to the Facebook page for the Hugs from Harrison fundraiser, and you can go get more details on drop-off locations, etc. And like I said, it's a great cause, and go get some toys to some kids that need some cheering up at Christmas time.
That was great interview. Great job, our special correspondent there, Kyle from the Grange Barbie. You did a great job, my friend.
Well, thank you, brother.
And a great cause, and we'll keep an eye on that for sure between now and the next few weeks, for sure, with everything going on.
As it said in the interview, December 16th.
Between
9 and December 16th.
So that'll be great. We'll keep an eye on that. We'll keep talking about that next few weeks into the middle of December, like Kyle said. So, gentlemen, one of the things I want to talk about on this podcast, disappointing night in Boone. I know another one of our special correspondents, Bubba Rosenbaum, was at the game last night. You drove up to Boone. Can you give your thoughts before Kyle and I will let you take the floor now?
Yeah, guys, needless to say, we got off to a very poor start last night, falling behind 11-0 right out of the gates, and we didn't have a bucket. We didn't have a point in the first 5-plus minutes, and then we started to chip away from that point. And we started to chip away at the lead, and really – started to limit some of those silly mistakes we made early on and just finally had some shots go down. J.J. Miles knocked in a couple of threes and maybe another perimeter shot. And unfortunately, he cooled off in the second half. And I think over the course of the year that J.J. Miles will be an excellent three-point shooter for us. I really do. He has a nice shot. And some of those, I think he finished the game maybe like 2 out of 8 from 3, 2 out of 8, and 2 out of 9. But those misses, the majority of them were close, and he had a couple that looked dead and went in and out. So I was encouraged with what I saw there. Seth Ledet had a really nice night, 20 points and 7 rebounds in like 24, 25 minutes. And so he was a bright spot, to be certain. And then also you had Brandon Suggs, you had a freshman like him who had a solid outing, I think 12 or 13 points. But one of the things that really stood out, and I know I told you this, Dave, off the air, is how much better we shot free throws, because
yes,
we only shot like 36% from the floor and like 23% from 5 out of 23 or so. But we knocked down 15 out of 19 from the free throw line, and that really helped us stay in the ball game.
You know, one thing that's one thing that I always as a player, as a coach, when I was coaching my basketball teams, I told them free throws are a difference between a good team and a great team. And when we were doing practice, guys, what we did is we shot free throws at the beginning of practice. We would shoot free throws during practice in the middle, and then right at the end of practice, we shoot it to simulate how they would feel. You know, obviously it's not game speed or anything like that, but just try to give them a feel of what it's like to shoot free throws when you're tired, you know, when you're fresh, all that kind of stuff. But I've always – free throws are a big deal, and it just drives me nuts. I remember the
Well, you know, Dave, if there's one thing we've learned from the Minji's the Maniacs, free throws win ball games. Woo.
The ECU pep band. Yeah,
but, pep band? Well, either way. Either way.
Right.
That's the one thing that drives me crazy is the free throws. And I think one thing I wanted to mention about the team, too, the way that I'll put this is I think that one of the problems we speculated could be a problem, and I think it already is, guys. I think the chemistry is not there, but it'll take time for that chemistry to work things out. And one of the things that I have to remind myself is these are – 11 new guys, and no excuses, absolutely no excuses, just saying that I need to keep in check, and hopefully Pirate fans will about the expectations, I think.
What bothered me, and granted, and you know, I'd like to hear Coach Dooley comment on this, because maybe what I was seeing was guys that didn't know quite what they were doing just yet, but I thought at times I thought some guys weren't giving as much effort as they could, or certainly like App State was giving more effort than us. And
Go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah, and I can't stand that. If you lose the game because somebody's better than you, because they got more talent,
right,
or because they're executing better, or just they're hot that night, but when at times it looks like it was an effort thing, that really pisses me off. And I know Dooley's not going to put up with it.
And that's exactly right. When you look at last year, guys, we have way more talent this year. But if you look at last year's team, we didn't have a third of the talent we have now. I mean, not even that. And now, one of the things that kept those guys in the games last year, they were not American talent. And the thing that kept us in the games was the fact that we were able to play hard, especially defense. We played good defense most of the time. Sometimes we didn't. But this year, we're going to have to, even though we have talent, if you don't have the effort, then it's like you don't have talent. I guess it's the same. A different way to say the same thing, Kyle. I mean, we got to have – it doesn't matter. Who cares if you – same thing. It doesn't matter what sport you're playing. Just because you have the most talent on paper, you still have to play the game. So, by the way, guys, I want to also mention –
go ahead, Bob.
If you want to say something else, go ahead.
Being there in person and watching it, I would certainly agree with what Kyle was saying as far as there were times where, I don't know, if guys were confused whether it was slow on a closeout, not getting the hand in somebody's face. I know that happened a time with Bibby on a corner three in the first half, And then there were also times where guys didn't box out well. Appalachian did a terrific job of boxing out. And we actually held a one rebound advantage in the game, which was surprising, I think, maybe because some of the putback opportunities that they got at critical times and things of that nature. But yeah, there were a few times where guys were immediately pulled from the game because of not hustling after loose balls and so forth.
Yeah, and it seems like guys in that our smaller lineups have been our more successful lineups. Why haven't we been able to take advantage of our size?
I think one of the things that Coach Dooley talked about is the very fact that what's happening now is when we're playing these early games, they don't have – in other words, we have the size – the reason why we got the size is to compete in American. Okay, so we have the tall guys. The problem we're having is that when there's mismatch with the non-conference schedule, because we've got guys now that were playing early on in the non-conference schedule that are smaller guys. So our big guys are having to go out there on the wing, and they're not being able to be rim protectors. And, you know, some people may say, again, that's an excuse, but mismatches are a big part of basketball. And so what we're having to do right now is there's times when we're going to have to go small to match up better with those teams that maybe don't have the height. That it's kind of like the East Carolina of old, where we didn't have the height.
Yeah, well, why can't we just get the ball to the perimeter and throw it to our tall guys and say, go lay it up?
It's not the offense is not the problem. It's the defense, I think, more so has been the issue. But what do you think, Bubba?
No, I was just going to expand on what you were saying, Dave, as far as the bigs. Luigi last night, Luigi played about 10 or 11 minutes, and because he did get in some early foul trouble there. There's a couple of ticky-tack calls, in my opinion. At least one of them wasn't very good. And then Charles Coleman, I think he played 15 minutes and had one bucket and then also two or three boards. But as far as it, he made a nice move or two offensively, just didn't finish there in the paint. And had a nice-looking jump or semi-hook.
Guys, why don't we go to Ryan Robinson now? People have been sitting here all this time listening to us babble, waiting for Ryan Robinson patiently. And why don't we go to Ryan now to come back and talk about the Liberty basketball game this weekend?
Well, Bubba, we got a very special guest actually going to the game tonight for Appalachian State, right, at East Carolina.
Yeah, I hope to see him up there at the Holmes Convocation Center. Pirates taking on the Mountaineers, and welcome into the show, East Carolina's Director of External Operations, Ryan Robinson. Ryan, we appreciate you joining us.
No problem, man. I'm in love, and I'm sitting in a hotel room right now overlooking the beautiful city of Boone, first time I've ever visited, and looking forward to a really good basketball game against, you know, a really good team that they're playing. So it should be a good night for the Pirates.
Ryan, we always talk about how great you and John are, and I just wanted to – can you confirm or deny that we're on the payroll at East Carolina for the guys at the Sports Detective?
We've actually hired you guys as freelancers, so we can pay you freely. There's no set salary, so we do appreciate it. And, you know, but I will tell you, you know, we take, you know, everybody – all feedback, and you all have given some great feedback. We take it seriously. I had an email today from a random fan that, man, she made like five really good points. And that's the kind of feedback that I appreciate, because you can't have thin skin in this business.
No question about it. We wanted to bring you on because, obviously, Pirates on a bye week, but I want to get your thoughts on, I was telling folks, there are people that don't realize the amount of hours you work. I know that you and John have, I equated things to, the analogy I use is like we're in a hole, but the good news is we're getting out of the hole, and definitely a breath of fresh air. I hate to use the term right the ship, but it just feels like with you guys being in charge and then the coaching hires that John, you guys have made, we're very happy with Kim McNeil, obviously. Coach Houston, I know, was the first hire that John made, and you guys, I'm really happy with the progress that we see with the coaching hires and certainly the program as a whole.
Yeah, we have an unbelievable staff. that is here. And I think the main thing at a meeting yesterday, and what I'm starting to see is there's a commitment from our staff. You know, they believe purple and gold, and I think they're starting to see. I mean, I do too. You know, last week I drove to Indianapolis, took a couple student athletes there. You know, this week I'm in Boone, and you know, John is staying back to go to the women's game. So there's just a commitment from a lot of different people to get this thing right. And you know, what our football team has done over the last 2 weeks has been impressive. But really, what's been impressive for me is they've gotten better each week, and I think that's important as you build a program.
Ryan, I got to give you credit for keeping straight here and answering your question with that annoying sound of somebody's whistling in the background, because I'm dying.
Oh yeah, I can tell Bubba's going up he must be going up the mountain.
Oh,
has he not figured out the mute button?
Yeah, somebody asked. Ryan, what kind of feedback are you?
That actually is not me. I heard the same thing. That is.
Yeah, I think it's Dave.
Because I had it on mute. And where I am, it's definitely dry. I heard those sound like windshield wipers.
Yeah, I think it's Dave. I was over here cracking up. But Ryan, what kind of feedback are you getting so far from fans positively? Everybody always wants to talk about the negative, but what are you hearing that people are liking this year with changes that have been made to game day?
Well, I think the biggest thing has been, you know, it sounds small, but the kids zone has been extremely popular, and I don't know any of y'all, if you have kids, but, you know, you go to that kid zone for football an hour before a game and then about 30 minutes and then at halftime, it's hard to find a spot. Like, we need to expand it. And it really goes back to giving people options. Yeah, we sell an alcohol. If you don't want alcohol, there's other things to drink. We need to be a little bit better probably in more selections for food. I think just the different areas. Now, the one thing we've learned is our footprint is kind of changing. You know, I wasn't here in the past, but I know before the game you had a lot of Pirate Club members in Menji's, and you had that Dowdy store. Well, a lot of stuff is drifting to the south side now. You know, that's where our biggest seller is right now for Dowdy merchandise. Some of our biggest concessions are on that side. Obviously, we have the kid zone. But I spent a lot of time at the Cincinnati game in the Williams Clark Club. And I tell you what, that is an impressive place. And we're not going to forget about it. Those people are valuable. And I think we can do some cosmetic things that can really improve that area. But really just learning about the different areas of the stadium, what's popular, what's not. Obviously, the Town Bank Tower speaks for itself. Haven't had a lot of complaints about that area. But, hey, listen, we got to fix, you know, I'll go over a couple small things that are not really small. Obviously, we have some stuff going on with our video board that is really out of the people, you know, it's not human error. It's really, we got to fix the board. You know, sometimes our sound system gets a little out of whack. So there's a lot of little things that we're looking at. But, you know, one of the things I'm real happy about this year, we got to honor as many teams as possible, you know, other sporting teams on campus at games. So we're just trying to add as much as possible, but not, you know, everything's got to be to enhance the experience. But we got a lot to work on football. I mean, I'm still unhappy that first game, you know, our concessions and some other things, we just weren't ready. And that was disappointing, but I think we answered the bell the second week. So there's a lot of things. I mean, I could talk forever about things we need to improve on. I do think from the men's basketball and women's basketball side, after the first couple of games for women and men, people are really happy with some of the changes made to Menji's in terms of the exterior and the graphics and the court. So that's a positive.
I was going to tell you, the court and the lighting and Menji's, oh, my gosh, that's the best. I think that's court. Bubba and Kyle, can you all chime in on it? I think that's the best the court's ever looked.
Yeah, really a lot brighter, lighter. The mid-court logo. I love the State of Mind logo on the football field. I've never liked it on the basketball court, to be honest.
Yeah, Kyle, a lot of people have said that.
So it looked great.
We got more stuff we got to do. You know, I'm not a big fan, and no one is, when you come into Minji's, the tile floors.
Yeah.
I don't want to give out too much, but in the month of December, you might not be walking on tile floors anymore.
Right.
Breaking news. So we're looking into that. That's getting rid of those tile floors will really change the entrance into Minji's. So, man, we're constantly. I'm going to the App State game tonight. Tomorrow, I'm actually going to go to the Greensboro Swarm game and then the Wake Forest basketball game, just to kind of look at what other people are doing and how we can get better. Because we got a staff that they want to get better. They're open for suggestions. So we're just getting started.
I wanted to touch on the football side, something you mentioned about the scoreboard. Two things.
Yes.
One, I love the video that was added a couple games ago. That, you know, you can feel the tide turning and, you know, the ocean's rising.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. I don't know whose idea that was. But
that was Eric Ward in our marketing. He's really good.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. And then the other thing, you mentioned the scoreboard. If I remember right, it's been 10 years now. I believe IMG paid for that scoreboard. I don't know if that's something you would know or not.
Yeah, and we were just, John Gilbert and I were talking about today. I mean, you know, John said, hey, Ryan, what do you think a new board would cost? I mean, as you all know in this business, that can range from, you know, $1 million to, you know, $15 million. So I don't want to say right now that it is – we have some other things that are really priorities. Now, it would be nice to get a new board. I think what's happening is there's some wiring and stuff going on in the back that sometimes when it gets real hot, it overheats. And you all see, like, sometimes during starting lineups, there's, like, one little block that
mm-hmm.
And that's frustrating. But it's frustrating for me. It's frustrating for Greg Pierce and Brandon Smith, who are two of the best in the business. So we're dealing with it. You know, we did get a new form for men's basketball. If you all hear that beeping, that is Drew Steele calling me. He calls me twice a day. And he'll probably call me 50 times while I'm on this interview. But it's part of my life. It calls me at 103, and then it must be 5:56. I don't know, I'm looking at my watch, but it must be nearing that. But that's usually the second time. But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we got a new horn for basketball, but I like it. You know, we kind of have a running joke in our office that, you know, we spent money to buy a new horn, and people are still complaining, and I get it. It just sounds different. But I'm happy that we got that done. We have some stuff in Minji's with the boards, you know, and for football, just think about adding LED boards.
Yeah.
You know,
oh,
you all
cool.
See that scoreboard there in the end zone. I mean, you look at some LED boards, maybe some LED boards underneath Town Bank Tower, you know, where the sign says Town Bank Tower in that area. But
that would be cool.
As someone once told me, guys, you can do a lot with money.
What that's an understatement. But
yeah.
You know, I was asking you about LED. How much is it? How realistic is it? I've seen, you know, at Alabama that, you know, after every touchdown now it's a light show. I've seen ODU utilize LED lights at halftime to do a light show. I've seen Fort Atlantic doing it. Is that something that we
realistic.
Can do?
Yeah, it's realistic. I mean, it's one of the things we'd like to get in baseball too.
Cool.
Obviously, you all have seen at baseball when we've had some lights issues. So I think it was in the regional last year or some other game where they went off for about 20 minutes. So, listen, we got to improve those areas, but, you know, you only have so much money to go around. One of the things, too, that we have a really need for is we have, I don't know if you all have seen the new turf practice field that, you know, soccer, lacrosse,
yes.
Baseball. Well, it doesn't have lights right now. So not saying that we have to get lights there, but that would be nice. And then I think at the end of the day, something people don't talk about a lot, I would love to see another weight room like a lot of colleges have. Listen, we got 19 sports. You try to fit them all in one weight room and do all the schedules. I think it would be pretty cool to have one near that Teams building right outside the soccer Johnson Stadium. another weight room for more of our student athletes. So, man, I could go on. I mean, John Gilbert and I sit around all the time and just and dream and talk about different things. But right now, I would say branding and graphics is really high on our priority list.
I had a question for you, Ryan, regarding the elephant in the room. How close can you give us breaking news? How close are we to an indoor practice facility? Because that's the I know that's a dream. Hoping that can come into reality sooner than later. I know it's a lot of money and we have to raise it, but I'm hoping to see something on that in 2020.
Yeah, you know, I have to be. I like you guys. So I'm gonna be honest. Has it been talked about? Yes, but I can't tell you that. I can tell you like no plans have been drawn or anything. I think it's you have to think about it. It is a very expensive thing. You could build one and kind of go the, you know, there are some people that build it that don't have, like, sides to it. It's just kind of a covering.
UAB.
Well, yeah, well, the problem is it's still not safe under light. So, you know, that's our biggest issue is lighting. I will tell you, I don't know how many practices we have missed this year. I don't want to say it's a bunch. I know Coach Houston sent me a text today because I'm not in Greenville, but I think it was coming down pretty good and it was cold. So it's been a great day to go inside. But listen, do we need one? Yes. There's a lot of things, a lot of variables that go into that. When you do a project of, I mean, let's just throw out a number, $15, $20 million, you would need someone to make a pretty substantial leadership gift. You know, David, just because, I mean, that's a lot of money just to raise with $5,000 there. And that's
Kyle's
what a massive sports objective wanted to purchase it. And we put that on outside the field house. It'd be nice.
Now, I can tell you what, if I had a lot of money, I would have as soon as y'all got there, I would have paid, wrote the check, my friend.
Yeah, I know Bubba has a question that he wants to get in, but I just want to follow up on it. I know you said there's no plans thrown up, and it seems to be, you know, at least during the offseason, Coach Houston seems to be something he really wanted, and I think to keep up with the Joneses in FBS football, I think we need one. I mean, I think, you know, I need to take a look at everybody else in the state. Bubba may know the answer to this, but we may be the only FBS school outside of Charlotte that doesn't have one.
No, I agree. We need one. I'd be lying to you if I told you we need one, because here's the thing, guys. Yeah, it's great for football. It's also great for other sports to be able to practice indoor. So, you know, you have areas around, you know, you have areas around campus where, or around our footprint that works. It's just, you know, we're kind of in the stages of, you know, how do you want to do it? How big do you want it to be? And how are you going to pay for it? So I look at the other side, you know, we just got done with the Town Bank Tower. You hope that people, if you started something with that, that they're going to rally around it. I don't know the answer to that. You all probably know better what people are saying on the outside, but you would need buy-in from a lot of people to make it happen. But, no, Coach Houston, I mean, he's not going to take that off his list. And I don't blame him, because he's trying to build a program that kind of can compete with anybody. And, you know, the word I always use, have sustained success. And I truly believe, and I told Coach Houston this yesterday, when this team wins a game, their next game, I think they're going to get on a roll. I think it's just getting over that hump. I do think now they believe they can win. I don't think early in the year they truly believed, hey, we're going to go out and win. But now he's building something, and you got 2 weeks left in the season, fellas, and a lot of people, I told our staff yesterday, a lot of people are going to say, oh, you got one more home game. It is what it is. Hey, that's the most important game of the year. You want to finish this offseason with some momentum. We are going to put some season tickets on sale in January and kind of have a 9-month payment plan. Gives people more options. You put less down. So I'm excited about that, because we have to increase our season tickets. Because you guys, I don't know what you think about the crowds this year. Listen, I'm grateful for anybody that walks through that stadium and supports the Pirates. But the bottom line is you're not going to get back to 40 or 50 when you have a low season ticket base. Because at William & Mary game, we sold 9,000 single game tickets. That was like the most since 2014 single game.
Wow.
So we're making progress, but when your season ticket base is low, it's going to be tough to get to 50. But I'm just grateful. John and I talked about this. Very happy with our crowds this year. I mean, they want to see a team that's going to win, but hopefully they're seeing it's a team that's going to compete, and it's on the rise. And, you know, our home schedule next year is very competitive. So it's a good time to be a Pirate. I do want to see this men's basketball team get rolling here this year, and I think Kim McNeil, somebody I've become really close to, is passionate and has a plan of how to build this program like it's never been built before.
Ryan, I had a comment for you and then also a question. The comment, earlier you were talking about Minji's, and I've seen the graphics, the East Carolina basketball, and that looks awesome. And then also in the stairwells where you have the EC Victory, the Words to the Fight song, I thought that looks awesome as well.
Yeah, we got some We the East. I don't know if you all have seen those. And then we've got some more stuff around midcourt. You know where it says, like, Section 113, you're going to start to see the brand pattern on, you know, both sides of, like, Section 113 and, I believe, Section 106. Just trying to find ways to add to it. I mean, one of the things we're talking about right now, we desperately need new chairs for our benches and for our courtside seats. But I'll tell you, fellas, we added 16 courtside seats for men's basketball, and they sold out in about 2 days. So people are excited. No one wants it more than Joe Dooley. I've become friends, you know, really respect Joe and what he's doing, because Joe Dooley is a heck of a basketball coach, and he cares about East Carolina, and it means something to him to get this program going back. Because really, guys, let's be honest. I mean, I think it's 3 winning seasons in 25 years.
Yep.
So I think the kids believe that they have an opportunity to kind of leave a legacy here. So it's exciting. Now, you know, you're playing, like, this week is a perfect example. Appalachian State's a good basketball team, and then Liberty's receiving votes in the top 25. So you got to be realistic. It's a young team without, you know, possibly 2 of their better players not playing right now.
And my question was, I know when we talked to you back in the spring, obviously during baseball season, you talked about how well the Dollar Hot Dogs went over at Clark LeClaire Stadium. Much is made of the drop in concessions prices on certain items like nachos and pretzels, hot dogs, so forth. So talk a little bit about how that has gone in football, and then also maybe not a specific number, but just talk about how the beer and wine sales have gone.
Well, I mean, you make a good point, Kyle. I couldn't sit here and tell you that, you know, we're not generating a ton of revenue from when you lower prices. But that's part of the decision we made, was to add to the fan experience with fan-friendly concessions. And a lot of it, too, is what we're learning about our footprint and all the different options fans have. You know, what I'm learning, and you guys already know this, this is a huge tailgating place. So there's not a lot of people hungry when they go into football games. So I'm learning a little bit about that. Alcohol sales, I mean, you're probably talking, I mean, just tell you the first 3 games, you're probably talking about gross $50,000. But here, you have to look at it this way now. You have people in the suites that aren't buying beer. You have you know, people in the trade club are buying alcohol, and then, you know, you have what, 9,000 students. Not many of them are buying alcohol. So, you know, I saw some of the numbers that North Carolina has, and we're not to that level. I think we got to continue to evaluate. Our prices are the lowest in the state, so we've got to continue to evaluate and how we can improve that service. I mean, I watched it at Minji's, the basketball game the other day, and there, you know, there's people, you know, buying alcohol there. It hasn't been out. I mean, I can't sit here and tell you it's been this unbelievable revenue generator, but it is the first year.
No question. Before we let you go, thank you. I know we've kept you longer than.
No problem. You kept Drew still from asking me what I've had for. What I'm going to have for dinner tonight, I can tell you that.
We have a question putting you on the spot, obviously, but we want really bad for the spring game to get Bon Jovi any way possible that we can. I know we're killing you with asking about indoor practice facility and then Bon Jovi for the spring game. Is that possible?
Why Bon Jovi?
Well, because Bon Jovi has mass appeal. Yeah. He's going to living on a prayer is a big deal for football games.
No country. You don't like y'all don't, wouldn't have a country singer.
Do what now?
No.
You wouldn't go the country route?
Well, we've done absolutely. That before. Look, if we're going to talk country music, I'm going to throw y'all off because I'm going to start talking to guys like Cody Jinks and Taylor Childers and Whiskey Myers. some good outlaw
didn't
country.
Didn't they try Blake Shelton here a couple years ago, I understand?
He didn't show up. We had Eric Church and Kid Rock, and it was a failure, not because Eric Church and Kid Rock, because we had some goofy company. Instead
the company
of like
was
Live
the problem,
Nation.
Not the act. Yeah.
Instead
the promoter.
Of using somebody like Live Nation, we used some goofy promotion company that the previous administration hired, and it was a disaster.
No, I'd love it. You know, we're talking right now about the spring game. You know what we can do. You know, something Friday night, even with the football, you have the spring game. But I think now having that Town Bank Tower, just that side. You know, if you can get baseball to play on the same weekend, softball, I mean, you could do some pretty cool stuff. I don't know the date of our spring game. For some reason, it tells me it's in that – I know Coach had talked about that 10th, 11th, or 12th, but I could be wrong on the date, but I know it's around there. And then I will tell you, stay tuned for an announcement here. Probably the next couple of weeks, we are going to do a signing day deal for the public. I believe that's December 18th. We're kind of working through the logistics of where we can do it. I've been a part of these in the past, and it's a great opportunity, you know, for fans to come for free and really hear from Mike and the coaches about all the recruits we just signed. So stay tuned on that. We're actually meeting about it tomorrow.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Ryan, so much. Get a win. I know you and Bubba can get a win tonight and Boone at Appalachian State with Joe Dooley and the Pirates. And bring a win back home to Greenville, will you?
Oh, I will. And I just got – hey, Kyle, now what was the name of those two bands you just said?
Oh, the bands that I was naming that yeah. I like?
Yeah.
Cody Jinks, Taylor Childers.
I know him.
Taylor Childers, Whiskey Myers. I don't know what kind of mass appeal that would be to Pirate Nation. Those are just my personal favorites. I'm into a lot of outlaw country. So.
Well, guys, man, I always enjoy going on with you. Call me anytime.
All right, thanks, man. Bye.
Ryan, thanks. Great job as always. Always good to hear from you. A lot of great details there. Bubba, sounds like some breaking news from Ryan about some changes to the entrance there of Minji's getting rid of some tiles.
Yeah, that's what that was a little breaking news for us, like you said, and that's what I recall when Minji's opened after the renovation in the winter there, January of 95, dedication game, I guess it was actually James Madison, but the first game was against East Tennessee State, and not to get off on a tangent, but my family and I, we were going to go down for that, and unfortunately there was some wintry mix there in the Winston-Salem area, and we weren't able to get out of Winston because of the traffic, but yeah, that tile that you alluded to, that has been there since then. So it's long overdue for sure, and I can't wait to see it here in a few weeks.
Good, Dave.
I was just going to say, I thought it was interesting, this discussion. Kyle, I believe you brought it up a few months ago back there. It's been at least that long ago about the scoreboard, especially for football. And that's something that is – I think you and I had talked about it way, way back when you first joined me on the podcast off air. But we've been talking about that scoreboard for a long, long time. It made me think about when he's mentioning about baseball. It made me think about the days when the lights were messed up in Harrington Field in baseball. And it just seemed like, but.
And it sounds like we're going to repair the scoreboard rather than replace it. If I remember right, I thought IMG or ISP or whoever the hell it was at the time paid for that scoreboard. And I don't guess. Maybe they're not willing to this time around. I don't know. It needs to be replaced.
Yep.
I do think, and I don't know how much of an investment that is. I don't know if we replace it with something the same size, but in full HD. I mean, I have no idea how much of an investment that is. I guess it sounds like maybe we're going to repair it so we don't have the pixelation problems. And I guess that's fine. But at some point, need to be replaced, and you know, like, along with the and it sounds like, you know, that they're not ready to really start a serious fundraising program for the practice facility, and I get it. I mean, we just built the town big tower, but the indoor practice facility is something that needs to be looked at.
I tell you what worries me, guys, is the very fact that my concern, and I will just put it out there, this is just me, so Kyle has brought the best of me as far as giving my concerns or putting them out there. My concern is I'm worried when I know that they're talking about the indoor practice facility, but I'm worried if the money's not there for the Talmage Tower. I'll just go ahead and put it out there. I've been debating on whether I should mention that the last few weeks anyway, but I'm saying it now. I'm just worried that they're worried that the money's not there. I don't know that to be true, so please don't. I'm not trying to start rumors.
Something I'm worried about. I'll say this. About ticket sales, about Talmage Tower, about the people that pledged the money and all, I'll say this. Next fall, all that stuff's going to start taking care of itself.
Right.
When this offense is when we're beating Marshall or South Carolina or somebody early next year, and we start winning, all that kind of stuff will suddenly become a lot easier because the excitement will return. I mean, hell,
right.
There's been a little buzz just from almost beating Cincinnati and SMU.
Yeah.
Think about when we actually start doing it.
It's going to be good.
Hey, and very quickly, Kyle, you know, you're talking about the buzz. That's what I was listening to the South Carolina podcast, and needless to say, they, as you would expect, were very ticked off over what happened over the weekend, and not so much even losing to Appalachian, but just the way they had zero offense and couldn't run the ball. But one of their fans had obviously been well versed on Coach Houston, his background, and what's taking place, the transformation in Greenville. So he was saying that South Carolina need to hire Mike Houston.
Well,
that's a good thing.
Fortunately, I don't think that's going to happen yet. But I'll tell you what, I bet they give Muschamp another year. And with the way he recruits South Carolina and with his ties down there, if we go do something like win 8 or 9, 10 games next year, you know, who knows what's going to happen. But let's just say, for shits and giggles, we go 8-4, 9-3 next year, and they fire Muschamp. It wouldn't be a surprise to see him on their short list. I hope that's not the case. I hope he stays here longer than 2 years. But, you know, that's a lot of ifs and buts. But if that happens, then what we got to make sure we do is turn around and make the right hire again. That's the biggest thing. You know, there's tons of schools that lose coach after coach after coach. Look at Arkansas State, the turnover they had there for several years.
Yeah.
And the key is just to get the hire right. If you hire the next guy right, look at UCF. You know, they lost Scott Frost and hired Josh Heupel. And, you know, I think suddenly some of their fans think 9-3 is unacceptable, but they had a great year last year. I mean, that's the key. I don't want to lose Coach Houston after next year. And granted, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, Bubba. But if we do, just get the hire right next, and it'll be all right.
And a couple other great examples of that, not as frequently as Arkansas State was, where they had something like 5 head coaches in 5 years or 4 in 4 years. But you also, within the American, Cincinnati and did a pretty good job of it. And an even better example was Temple. Because with Cincinnati, you had Tuberville that had a couple down years, but at Temple, they've kept things rolling since Al Golden got it going, and then Steve Adazio, et cetera.
Matt Rule, yeah. I mean, it's you can do it. It's just, you know, you got to make sure you make the right decisions. When you're in that position, when a coach is leaving and you're making a hire, you're in a lot better situation than you are when you fire a coach, particularly at this level. And look at when Skip left, you know, we hired Ruffin, and think about how that went. That went well. Think about when we fired Logan and when we fired Ruff, how the next big coaches went. Not too good. It's a lot easier. And granted, again, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but be interested to see how it plays out over the next couple of years. I definitely thank Coach Houston because of his background as being so successful and winning national championships at the FCS level. I think if he wins here, and because his dynamic personality, if he wins here, he will become a hot candidate.
Oh, I totally agree. No, no doubt about it.
So, Bubba, we have we got another guest. This is a threefer here. We have former East Carolina running back Brandon Simmons. And Bubba, tell them why we had Brandon on.
Yeah, when we caught up with the former Pirate running back from the Skip Holtz era, and that's what Brandon is now, teacher and coach in the high school ranks, and prior to his current position at Green Level High School there in the greater Raleigh area, he was a coach with Millbrook and had the opportunity to coach Tyler Snead. Obviously, Tyler Snead has certainly made his presence felt here in his redshirt freshman season with East Carolina, and had 19 catches for 230 or 40 yards and three touchdowns last weekend against SMU. And so we had a chance to catch up with Brandon to talk about Tyler and several other topics. And let's go to that interview with Brandon Simmons right now.
Well, Bubba, we've been wanting to have him back football season. I don't know. It seems like they're trying to get our schedules together. Very happy to have our next guest.
Yeah, a guy who played for the Pirates, Brandon Simmons. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Hey, glad you guys can have me, man. I do appreciate it as always. Great times.
Well, I'll tell you what, if there's a guy that knows how to rebuild a program, we've got that. And looks like we have one with Coach Mike Houston at the college level. First of all, we're going to be talking about one of the guys that used to play for you. So we're going to talk about Tyler Snead. But first, before we do that, get your thoughts on your former player. We had you on before.
So let's let Brandon tell everybody where he's coaching at. Not everybody's going to know where we're
okay.
Yeah, tell everybody where you coach at, Brandon, and what you're doing now so people will know about you coaching Tyler Snead.
Yeah, well, first things first, I'm currently coaching at the newest school in North Carolina, the newest school in Wake County, Green Level High School, which is located in Cary, North Carolina. We're part of the Tri-8 Football Conference. We're a fairly new school, but the older members in our conference is Durham Jordan, Durham Hill, yeah. Hillside, Green Hope, Panther Creek. The list goes on and on, you know. But that's currently where I coach at. On paper, I'm the quarterback coach, but on the field, I'm actually the backfield coach. So I have the quarterbacks, the dive backs, or the B backs, or the fullback, and then I also have the slot receivers as well.
And the reason we wanted to have you on tonight was one of your former players where you were at previously, Tyler Snead, is having he had a breakout. Well, I wouldn't want to call it a breakout game.
Correct.
Against SMU, because he's already been a star, but he took it to a whole other level Saturday.
He has been, and you know, Tyler, I actually keep up with him quite often. But I had the great opportunity to work with him closely at Millbrook High School. For us, he was everything. He was a running back, a pitch back, a receiver, a punt returner, kick returner. So I'm in the Tyler Snead fan club, no doubt about it.
Wanted to ask you as far as one of those moments, how do you, when you see a kid like him, I know you told us he was great. When did you know that he was, when you were coaching him at Millbrook, when did you know that he was special, when he was great?
Well, so Tyler, the thing about Tyler is that on day one, I never forget it. The very first time that I saw the kid practice, and be mindful, you know, at Millbrook, we had a number of quality, elite, big time players that are coming out. But out of everybody, he was one of the smaller guys, but he had the competitive nature that, in my opinion, it takes to be a champion. No matter who the guy was in front of him, he took it personal when the defender attempted to cover him. He brought his lunch pail every single day. Every single weight room session, he was trying to be the strongest guy in the room. And he's just the ultimate competitor. So, you know, that, you know, in a nutshell, you know, that's Tyler. I mean, he worked his tail off. He worked his tail off. And as long as I've known him, he's had that same moxie and attitude everywhere he's been.
Brandon, you know, what was Tyler's recruiting process like? I mean, obviously,
So the way it goes is that you guys know, man, you guys follow Rivals. You guys follow all of the big recruiting sites. You know, basically what it was that recruiters knew he can play. but everyone, from my knowledge, basically held his sides against him. You know what I'm saying? And made no mistake, you know, I coached in junior college, and I, you know, obviously played in college, so I know exactly what they look for in certain types of players at certain type of positions. But at the same time, I just think far too many recruiters get caught up in the numbers. And at the end of the day, it's about what happens when you play the tape. Like, your tape is the resume. And all I know is that every time he touched the ball for us, I grabbed my popcorn because he was putting on the show. You know what I'm saying? And that's just what he is. I mean, he's thought blocked. He gets open. Very selfless individual. He oftentimes coached up the younger players. You know, he's even a better dude. Like, his whole family is committed to excellence. They're all blue collar. They all give back to the community. And you know, he comes from a great family too. You know, so the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
And you know, what's funny is that he actually didn't you say that his family went to NC State side?
So just a quick overview of him, and I'm not gonna give you a long winded answer, but you know, his father was a baseball player at NC State, his mother was a cheerleader at NC State, his older sister was a gymnast at UGA, and his two youngest sisters, who were a part of my powder puff teams, they're believe it or not, they're faster than him. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, he comes from they're close to the Prohl family. You know, Ricky Prohl and you know, Austin Prohl and all those boys. They're a tight knitted family. But I mean, they get it. Like, he gets it. You know what I'm saying? Like, a guy with that much support tends to, in today's time, tends to be very arrogant and very selfish. But, you know, this kid right here is the complete opposite, and I can honestly stand on the ledge and say that, you know. So, but I'm happy to see that he's finally getting his opportunity with this regime, because, like I said before, he pride himself on working hard every single day.
With CJ back healthy for UConn, you know, maybe they'll have a competition on who can catch the most balls in the game. Maybe they'll both set a record in one
look,
game.
Look, man, look, if that happens, watch out.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think of the offense, the dramatic turn this offense has taken? And Houston and Donnie Kay have traded it all to starting some young offensive linemen kind of because of the injury, and maybe we should have been starting them all along.
Well, my two cents worth, man. You know, I'm watching the game for what it is. What I see is that, you know, for example, Holton, man, he's playing like he used to play in high school. He's not doing as much thinking. He's just going off of his natural ability. He's believing what he's seeing. You know what I'm saying? The game is also slowing down for him, and I also think that Coach Kirkpatrick and the whole staff understands the importance of scaling down the game plan for younger players. And it's just more than anything else. Like, the passing concepts that I see out there are very, very simple. The run game is very, very simple. Like, everything is super-duper simple. And, again, I credit the coaching staff for not only making personnel adjustments, but shrinking their playbook so that the guys can play faster. You know what I'm saying?
It didn't happen all at once, but it seems like it did. It seems like all of a sudden the switch went off.
Well, the thing about it is what I think happened was, I think that, you know, just being honest about the situation, he, you know, Holton knew that he wasn't playing the best. You know what I'm saying? Like, he knew he wasn't. But I also think that when he started hearing more and more chirp about, okay, guy, you had your opportunity to kind of move in a different direction, I think that he took it personal. And the mark of a competitor is taking that criticism, bottling it in, and then doing something about it. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, for the past two games, to be honest, he's been box office. You know what I'm saying? And if this is the guy that we're going to get every single game moving forward, we're going to be okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, we just will be, you know? So, but again, a credit to those guys for getting it done.
You know, there was a lot of those folks talking about he should move over to tight end. Where there's men and women now? Where are they now?
Well, to be honest, man, and I'm going to call it spade a spade, they're still there. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're still there, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, you still got to win games. But I do think that if he continues to play the way he is playing right now, I think that he will never hear that type of talking anymore. And the only reason I say it is because, you know, ECU is known for putting out quality quarterbacks, like we just are. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, receivers have something to do with it, defensive linemen, running backs. But, you know, I hate to say it, but Pirate Nation has sort of kind of been spoiled by the greatness of the quarterback position, you know what I'm saying, like over the years. Like, you could just name them from the David Garage to the Crandall to, you know, obviously James Pickney, Patrick Pickney, and Shane Carter. Like, the list goes on and on. Like, we've had some pretty darn good quarterbacks throughout our career that can get it done, you know what I'm saying? So when people are critical of his production, they're measuring him against some of the all-time greats, you know what I'm saying, that have won championships, that have won bowl games, and just flat-out can play.
Yeah, and have you guys, I'm sure you have, I think, Bubba, right now we're starting with one senior on the O-line. Literally every damn body on the offense is back.
Pena is the only one I could think of, right?
Yeah.
Brandon Pena.
Yeah, everybody's back except Pena. That's insane.
Well, if you're going to bite, you're going to bite as a pup, you know what I'm saying? And that's just something that was always passed along through Skip. Like, they just called it straight up. They say, hey, listen, man, like, you know, if you're going to bite, you're going to bite as a pup. So it doesn't matter how old you are. If you got fighting you, we're going to figure out a way to utilize you to help us be successful. And those younger guys wanted an opportunity. The older guys had their chance. It didn't work out, and it's all good. Nothing personal, but the younger guys are getting their opportunity. And they're making the most of it. And again, kudos to them for taking advantage of it.
Yeah, Brandon, you played running back. Obviously, we came into the year. Darius Penix was the man, and so he went down against Gardner Webb. And then so we've seen several guys there. Demetrius Mooney and Trace Christian have gotten the bulk of the carries. But then this past weekend, you saw Tay Williams. Coach Houston said that his pass protection had gotten a lot better, and as a result, you saw him get 14 carries. For, I think, 65 yards, something like that. But just talk a little bit about what you've seen at the running back position with each of those guys.
Well, to be honest with you, like, and I'm, you know, I'm obviously very critical of that position, obviously, because of my size and all that good stuff. So you know, it's very personal. But what I saw was guys that were, they will see the hole. But instead of them sticking their toe in the ground and getting vertical north to south, they were sort of kind of hesitating. And by that time, the offensive lineman was disengaged with the defensive lineman, and the defensive lineman was making plays. Made no mistake, man. In the American Conference, you're playing some cats every single weekend. Like, this league is putting out some of the premier defensive linemen. Yeah, no, in all of college, you know what I'm saying? So there, you know, there's definitely not a slouch there. But I just think a lot of it just has to do with the offensive linemen gelling together. They're getting stronger because I'm also starting to see movement up front, combo blocks working to backers and sometimes safeties. And also starting to see running backs come alive by breaking tackles, making people miss, and finishing falling forward, which wasn't always the case earlier in the year.
It feels like they've got a lot of confidence, too, don't you think, Brandon?
Oh, confidence is everything. Absolutely. Confidence is everything. But again, in order for you to become an elite running back, you have to also understand the blocking scheme, you know? I mean, for example, no matter where I go as a coach, my ultimate goal, whenever I'm working with running backs, is to show them what the offensive lineman blocking rules is so that they can learn how to set up their blocks. And I just think that, like, for example, even when I was at ECU, I would sit in the offensive line meeting room with Coach Shank so I can understand the blocking scheme so I can know how to cut up field or know when to cut it back and just becoming a better player. But I just think that a lot of those guys are starting to understand the chemistry, and because of that, they're able to keep pressure off of the passing game.
Brandon, how's Coach Houston – and the staff being received by high school coaches there in the Triangle?
Well, we think highly. Like, to be honest, we think highly of Coach Houston. We always appreciate his demeanor. He comes across like a old school blue collar, let's get after it type of coach. He is who he is, and because of that, we appreciate that as high school coaches. You know, the fact of the matter is that. you know, when it comes to recruiting, the things that we as high school coaches look for in college coaches is them being real. You know, like you don't have to be a phony. Like, be who you are so that when we prepare our kids for you, okay, we feel comfortable sending our kid to you, you know. And again, I can say that about Coach Houston, but I definitely don't feel the same way about that to all recruiting or all programs across America. I just don't, you know. So, but it's very important. Coach Houston and his staff, they have that blue-collar mentality. And because of that, I think that not just myself, but many, many other coaches are going to do all we can to prepare our players to help him and his staff bring home championships.
Brandon, and my question, we got to go here in a second, and we definitely, can we have you back on in a week or so on a playback or preview? With
our Absolutely.
All right. Absolutely. We wanted to have you on, and I'm sorry for Thomas running up, unfortunately. But question I had for you is, I have a serious question and a funny question for you.
Uh-oh.
But the serious question, no, it's not bad. it's not related to football, so you'll understand
okay.
in just a second.
Oh, you're fine, Steve.
No, as far as this goes, how fast the guys are starting to get it. We have some people, unfortunately, and I get it. They're impatient, and because of the losing season, five straight.
Right.
But how fast we see this South Carolina recruiting's out of, oh, my gosh, they're getting unbelievable, the relationships with South Carolina, and I know North Carolina as well. But how fast do you think we can turn this thing around? We don't ask for the coaching staff because it's unfair, but now you're a former player. Do you think in a year or two that we could really be – it's hard to believe this fast we're competitive against Cincinnati and SMU the last 2 weeks.
Well, so, and this is just the honest God truth. It's funny because I was actually speaking with a parent about this earlier in the day about a kid that's being recruited, just a good friend of mine. Basically, as long as you're getting better every single week, you always give yourself a chance. And again, like I said before, if this ECU team continues to play the way they are right now for the remainder of the season into next year, this thing's going to get turned around in year two, no doubt about it. Like, no doubt about it. If we would have seen this ECU team right here at the top of the season, we'll be in a bowl game.
Absolutely.
We'll be going
exactly.
to a bowl game. We'll be
no
going to a bowl
it.
Game. But it's going to take time. A year or two, we should have some conversations with some people.
And what do you think about my funny – well, not really funny question, but my question is off-topic football. What do you think about the Hurricanes?
Man, I can't wait. I can't wait. The Hurricanes, man, I can't wait. You know, my season just ended, so I get a chance to go to a few Hurricanes games, which I'm excited about. But, you know, if it's anything like it was last year, hey, man, grab your popcorn because we're going to have a good old time. I can't wait.
Hey,
I'm excited about Hurricane hockey.
We got to get together. And I told Bubba and Kyle they need to meet us there at PNC.
Yeah,
right,
man, yeah, come on out. Yeah, come to Raleigh, man. Let's do it.
All right. Well, Brandon, thank you so much, man, and we'll definitely we'll get our hockey sticks out too, and we'll definitely come up there soon. And I'm going to get – once Kyle sees it, he's going to – in person and Bubba as well, they're going to be –
If you're taking your hockey stick out, I'm not coming.
All right.
All right, man. Anytime, man. Anytime, definitely.
Appreciate you, man. All right.
Likewise.
Have a good night.
All right, bye.
Thank you, Brandon. I always get to catch up with Brandon. You know, sometimes I get a little aggravated with him on social media. He kind of roots for the Tar Heels a little bit in shooty hoops.
Shooty hoops, I like that.
Hoops, yeah. You know, so that bugs me. But besides that, Brandon's a stand-up guy, great pirate, great man, and a guy you can always count on. Anytime you not only to come on the podcast, but anytime we've had an event, he's always showed up and brought people with him. So good pirate. He just. He just needs to learn to root for Pirate basketball. But Bob's picking Pirate basketball, Liberty this weekend, man. Liberty getting voted in the top 25 NCAA tournament team last year. Big game this Saturday.
Yeah, huge game against the Flames. And like you said, that's a program that won an NCAA tournament game a season ago. I haven't delved really far into it. I know they won. I think they won their opener against Maryland Eastern Shore by about 12 to 15 points, and then I'm not sure what they've done since. But big opportunity, and we certainly need a win after dropping back-to-back road games. Hopefully we can get a big win over Liberty. And speaking of the non-conference schedule we have in the recent or in the near future, you know, so let's talk about what the Evansville Purple Aces did last night, knocking off new number one Kentucky at Rupp Arena, 67-64, Evansville.
Yeah, shocking. I mean, I don't know. Nobody that would pick that. I mean, I know Evansville has a good basketball program, but to go to Kentucky, beat them, number one ranked team in America, you know, I don't know what else Evansville's done this year, but they'll probably be in the top 25 when we play them next weekend in the Bahamas. So Pirates have an opportunity. You know, you can make these games against Navy and Appalachian State a distant memory in a hurry if you can go knock off Liberty and Evansville.
Yep, no doubt about it. And then Liberty and Evansville, and then there's, depending on what happens, there's a chance you could meet Liberty a second time.
George Washington.
Yeah, a lot of basketball to be played for sure. And as frustrating as these last two games have been, and a lot, and as much as longtime followers and supporters of the program want to say it's the same old stuff, you got to remember that we have 11 pieces and just be patient, as hard as that is sometimes, and let's see how things play out, and especially once we get our top two point guards back, because I'm very excited that we have Tristan Newton, and I know he's going to be a great Pirate over the next several years, but Tremont Robinson-White and then also Tyree Jackson will make a huge difference, because that's something coming down the stretch in that game last night, and I'm sure you noticed this, Kyle, watching it on ESPN Plus, is just how there were times where we were right there. It was, the game was one possession either way. We would have an ill-advised pass or something of that nature. We just didn't get good shots, and Coach Dooley alluded to that in his post-game remark.
Yeah, no, do you know when either one of those kids will be ready to go?
I know Tremont Robinson-White, I saw on social media that he is going to be out as of a couple of days ago, four more weeks from that point. So it's looking like maybe mid-December or so for him. Maybe he can be back for that Charlotte game on Sunday, the 22nd or 23rd of December, whatever that is. But maybe he can be back then. It's going to be at least that long, it appears. And then as far as Tyree Jackson, I think it could be sooner. I think it's kind of a week-to-week, game-to-game thing.
Okay, well, maybe we'll get him back. Maybe we'll get him back for the tournament in the Bahamas. Who knows? But no football game this week, as Coach Ruff says. We will beat off. So that'll be fun. After that, we close it out. We got two games. Close it out, Bubba. We got Connecticut up at UConn. Good. I hope the guys practice today. This is good exposure and running the offense in the cold weather today. They hopefully Coach Houston had them out there. Shorts. Getting some exposure to this cold weather. Don't want that as an excuse when we go to UConn. And when we come home Thanksgiving weekend, hopefully playing for win number 5 against Tulsa. I hope so. 5-7 is what I predicted preseason. And beat UConn, and you have that opportunity against Tulsa.
Definitely. And kind of something, just to touch on what you're saying as far as going up to UConn on November 23rd and playing in definitely playing in cold, but then maybe wet weather as well, or snow, who knows. But let's hope not. But I just think back to that Thursday night game in 2015. Let's hope it's a better result than that. But anyway, I just think of Coach Houston and one of his pregame speeches that he gave at James Madison. Just telling the team that you guys
are
built.
A Friday night game.
Right. Friday night game. Because I remember I was coaching at the time, so I remember
the stupid things
not being able to watch that game. But yeah, as far as the weather, I just remember Coach Houston telling his James Madison team, "Hey, you guys are built to win in late November, early December." So obviously it's year one, but that was, I guess, only year two when he made that speech for that game and new team. So hopefully we'll take care of business and have the opportunity to get number 5 on senior day against Tulsa.
Yeah, I hope so, man. It's been it's sad that we would be excited about getting five wins, but it's true. It's been since 2015 since we've had five of them. Hell, it's been since 2015 that we've had four of them. First things first, let's get number four against UConn and then go for number five against Tulsa. Well, Bubba, we're going to wrap it up now, man. For Dave Richmond and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Kyle Barber, and this has been the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.